And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to August. As Luke, we are finally, 25 days away as we record this? Gopher football getting here.
I mean, we've both watched a practice.
Yeah, that's the big storyline is Luke Buer showed up to something.
Yeah, Ryan. And guess what? There are wonderful Gopher Gridiron Radio listeners around me. A couple of them said hi. I always appreciate when people say hi. And I'm sorry to them who got their ear basically yelled off by my kids or talked off by my kids. One of the two, right? I can't really decide which.
Mr. Puke in the eyelashes? I won't say the names of your children on his hair.
Yeah, it was him. He was in rare form.
Yeah, so. I can only imagine. What is he, like five now?
He's six. He was in rare form. And I am not exaggerating when I say they could have cared less about Coy Parrish. But let me tell you, that punt machine, like the ball thrower, they thought that thing was the sweetest thing they had ever seen.
To be six and to view the world of football with that type of wonderment takes me back, Mr. Yeah. Luke Buer. But yes, Luke Buer attended the only, as far as I know, Gopher practice here that was on Saturday night. Luke, I'm just excited to get your hashtag hot takes on so many different aspects of this team, because tonight we get to talk about the Gopher offense.
I don't know if you know this, but because of the fact that I now have talked to a couple regents, I have a lot of pull.
Well, have you? Of which I think the reaction to those was actually very good, Mr.
Yeah,
Buer.
It was fun.
I've heard from more people that I guess I don't normally hear from in terms of, I had a couple of Gopher staffers as I'm standing there on the sidelines come up to me and say, we listened to that one. We actually learned a lot.
Oh, that's good.
So the regents that came on with you, we appreciate it. And look at you doing your civil duty for all the listeners as well.
Well, because I did that, Ryan, here's what happened. Football department reached out. They said, Luke, what works in your schedule for our open practice this year? And I said, folks, clearly Saturday, August 2nd, 6 p.m. works great. Let's do it. Yep. So what next open practice do you want? I think I can pull some strings.
Well, unfortunately for me, I get to, or fortunately or unfortunately, depending upon how you want to view it, I get to cover one on my birthday here this upcoming week, which is only open.
Oh, man. I know what day
to
that
the
is.
Media, because I turn 58. Because what are you, 63 now?
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah. There. Yeah. So get to cover one on my birthday, but media gets to view two more here the next two Tuesdays, and
nice.
Then we get to formulate all of our thoughts and feelings and opinions and put them in writing. But luckily for you listeners, I've talked to enough people behind the scenes. I've seen one practice with my own very eyes for the first time in 4 months, and we get to deliver some takes about Greg Harbaugh's third year commanding the Gopher offense.
All right, Ryan, it's been a while also since we talked, and we haven't reviewed some of the Spotify comments of late. This is something we'll definitely do in the off season. We'll maybe be able to do in season, but some of these are pretty good. Probably the one I like the most of recent was with regards to the Regent episode that I did. And it reads, I really like the idea of Luke doing these spinoff podcasts about Gopher football adjacent topics. I'll be patiently waiting for Luke and Heather Flex interview during the bye week this season, to which I absolutely LOL'd at.
I love that for you, the spinoff. By the way, I would love to be the one that leads the Heather Fleck one, where we can talk skincare, we can talk her background in cars. She's huge. She is, I think, what do the kids call it? Is it still a wrench monkey?
Sure, gearhead. I don't know.
She is incredibly knowledgeable there. I mean, she is a very versatile woman. You know what? I might make that request. See if I can't get Heather on during one of the bye weeks.
If we want to do one of those adjacent or off season, maybe we get Heather and my wife to talk about skincare, because heaven knows I know nothing about it. Okay. this one was pretty good too. Listening to this at the gym, moving big weight while learning about the behind the scenes was an incredible experience. Hope for more. So apparently really pumping people up at the gym with some region talk. I didn't know that was really even possible.
You know, I'm the last one to talk about what I listen to while I work out because my wife and my friends yell at me. I don't know if I've ever told you this. Do you know what I listen to while I work out?
No. What?
I listen to so I have a workout playlist, which primarily is just EDM. It is like,
okay,
I grew up in an area or an era of like, back in my college days, it was big into like Avicii and different things like that. I will put one song on repeat for 45 minutes and I will only listen to one song from that playlist for the entire 45 minutes.
Really?
Because I'm a psychopath.
You are a psychopath.
Yeah, I know it's crazy behavior, but here I am.
Yeah. If we go back to the episode, cause we haven't talked since we did the episode with Eric Vigo, I do want to talk about this a little bit. One listener said, I turned this off when Luke said coaches aren't important. Dude is unlistenable most of the time. That's fair. You can think I'm unlistenable. I would like to point out that I didn't say that coaches aren't important. I said that coaches would be less important in this new NIL transfer portal era slash rev share era. I do believe that. And I think especially in basketball, they are going to be less important. I do think in football, they are going to have a little bit less importance. I don't think nearly to the extent in basketball. I think that front office people are going to have significantly more impact on college athletics going forward. So one, if I am unlistenable, that's fine. But make sure that what I did say, you quote correctly, because I didn't say that they aren't important. I said they would be less important.
Do you feel better?
I don't know. Like, yes. Like, I don't particularly care if someone thinks I'm,
I mean, we obviously don't agree on the whole coaches. No, the less importance, is it 1%? Is it 10%? Is it 30%? That's where the disparity, I think, between you and I lie. I think you think it's more significant. I think it's certainly less.
Yeah.
I think coaches are going to matter more than you do still. But that's okay. Again, it's incredibly subjective in that regard.
It is incredibly subjective. I think especially in basketball, it's going to be more akin to the NBA. Do coaches matter in the NBA, Ryan?
I'm the last one to tell you any NBA.
They do. I think they do. Stop. I think they do. But relatively speaking, you don't see massive changes with a massive results changes with a single coach.
This is not an NBA podcast. My only NBA take, I've been a Wolves fan since God, Tom Gugliotta, J.R. Ryder to the Alexei Shved years, is now more than ever, Luke, the hill I die on is an NBA game does not matter at all until there's like 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Okay,
Luke, it just does not matter. I have been at so many games, or when I do watch an entire game, the Wolves could be up 25 or down 25. It doesn't matter because within the last 5 minutes, it's going to be like an 8-point game.
Okay, that's fair. That's fine. I generally just think that more and more we're seeing an evolution to players being the most important thing. I know you agree with that, Ryan. The players are just the most important thing. If you don't have the dudes, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, players over plays. It's always been that way. And it will always continue to be that
way. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
See, these are the Spotify comments. We read the good ones. We read the ones that are...
We read all of them. It's just that we can't read all of them and comment on all of them.
We have any more?
You know, there was one guy who was like, great pod. As always, boys. Thanks, man.
We do read the Spotify comments and we're going to try to do it every week. So again, this is our way of trying to engage with you guys. I know that other podcasts, like say Gleeman and the Geek, they have their own email. We're not as important as them. So if you want to interact with us outside of the lovely Gopher Illustrated message boards, We appreciate them. And Steve, we're still going through them. I'm proud of us.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll keep going through them. You could drop them. You could drop comments and reviews, obviously, on Spotify and Apple podcasts. We do try and review them, and we'll try and get to them every episode. Do you want to just do some practice observations and then get into the actual breaking down the offense?
I have two disclaimers, actually three disclaimers before we get into this.
Okay.
The first one you love to do for me.
Yeah.
But we'll start here when I say, if I don't talk about your child as the next Hall of Famer for the Gopher Athletics, or whether they're a loved one, however they're related to you in some capacity, I do not hate your child. I want to get that out there right now. Number two, if you want to read my observations, gopherillustrated.com, 50% off right now, I think essentially through the end of the month. So we got two more media practices that we get to attend. I got injury reports. I got my own observations. I got some intel of where things are kind of at. You can read it all on the message board, of which if I don't cover something in my practice report and you're like, I wonder about this. Well, guess what? You can just ask me and I can about guarantee within 1 hour I will respond with the latest I know there. And number three, I'm not sure if you can hear the kitten war crimes in the background, but I put it out on social media here this evening that if you don't know my life, I have spent most of the summer with my wife fostering kittens. And they are now ready to go to, I think as the kids would say, their forever homes. And F-U-R, ever. They're forever homes. A little play on words there. So we got a few of them that, again, they are just, I don't know if the listeners can hear, but they're on the other side of a door from me, and they're just going crazy. So they've got all their shots. They're spayed and neutered. They're microchipped. They're ready to go. So if you've been talking with your significant other, or maybe you're by yourself and you want to get a 3-month-old year old kitten into your life, as I put out on social media, the direct messages are open for you to potentially claim a new furry friend.
I didn't realize that this was a side hustle to the side hustle that you have here.
Oh, but wait, I like how side hustle. I don't get, to be clear here, I don't get paid for any of this.
So you're just giving the kittens away?
Well, I think there's a fee through the, I'm trying to even think of what it's called. My wife's going to kill me. Like the shelter.
Okay.
We're just fosters for them. So we've had them since they were like 6-ish weeks old, and now I think they're just over 3 months. So we've been taking them to kitty vet appointments and spay and neuter and different types of events, trying to get them adopted. And again, they're ready to go. So I think it's like a $200 per kitten.
Okay.
But again, you don't have to take them to the vet or anything. I can attest. I'm the one who brought them and got all their shots and microchips and spay and neuter and everything like that. So they're ready to go.
Okay. Just so you know, I'm good. I don't need cats.
I have asked so many people in my circle if you want a cat, including you, and none of you want cats, which
I'm not a cat person.
That's okay. Yeah. I'll tell you, I grew up, never had a cat. And now I've got 3 full-timers and 160-pound Mastiff. And then I had 7 cats in my upstairs here, which was incredibly chaotic for most of the summer. So we're doing our best out here.
Okay, we got our disclaimers out of the way.
Yep.
Hot takes from the open practice. You want hot take number one from me?
Oh, boy. Can't wait for this.
Steamy hot. This might be from one practice observation, the deepest looking wide receiver core we've had in some time. Not necessarily saying in production, but it just like getting off the bus. Like, I like it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating group is kind of the way I put it, because we've seen throughout the years that Matt Simon, who's the wide receiver coach here at the University of Minnesota, whoever the offensive coordinator he works with, like, we've seen them expand the reps. Like, I think about 2019,
yeah,
where you had Bateman, Tyler Johnson, Demetrius Douglas, a young Chris Ottman Bell. Like, you had multiple guys that they would rotate, like 4 or 5 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about years like last year, where it was essentially Daniel Jackson plays the whole game. Elijah Spencer takes every rep he can handle, and maybe we rotate one other guy in. And that's where I look at this 2025 receiving core, and I think it's going to be a lot more like 2019. Now, some of that is because they lose Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer, which we'll get into a little bit more in depth. But they also just have a lot of guys that have something to prove, where you've got the transfers of Javon Tracy and Logan Loya. They're supposed to come in and provide immediate production. You have a returner such as Lameke Rocketship Brockington. Did I get that one right for you?
Yeah, you got that right. That's, again, the six-year-old coin to that one.
Yeah, we've been waiting for that breakout season for some time, and unfortunately for him, injuries and other things have taken their toll. You have other transfers that are now acclimated, such as Christian Driver. You have young guys such as Jalen Smith, the Mankato West kid, after his redshirt season. I've been banging that drum about as loud as I can possibly do. Well,
what's his name? Is it Kendrick Lanier?
Kendrick Lanier is a. I'll tell you this.
He looks the part. Like,
well, that's what I'm getting to. Is even a guy like Kendrick Lanier, who kind of gets lost in the shuffle here, who's a former All-American. Like, I was talking to some people while I was at the practice, and they were telling me he might have had the best offseason of any of these receivers.
Yeah.
So much of it is they have 6-7 guys, and we haven't even talked about a guy like Malachi Coleman from Nebraska, who, I mean, he is, I mean, that's what it looks like out there. Well, so
you also have injured. You have, I think he looked injured. Was it Duke or Nuke?
Yeah, Nuke Hayes. He was catching passes with a club on his left hand.
Yeah.
Which that's the type of thing that he has to do, though, if he wants to stay in this race, because there's 6-7 guys vying for, say, 3-4 spots. Now, if you're asking me right now, I do think that Matt Simon and Greg Harbaugh are going to rotate probably 5 or 6 guys, at least in the non-conference, unless, again, here's the disclaimer that I also want to put out there. We are 1 week into fall camp. And from talking with PJ Fleck last night about the receiver position, of which I'll have an article out here early this week about his thoughts about where things are at, he's right in the instance of, you have to remember that even yesterday when Luke and I were there, and I'm sure some of you listeners were there, you saw one practice of, say, 26 this month.
Yes.
And they're 18 to 23-year-olds. Some guys are going to have good days. Some guys are going to have average days. Some guys are going to have bad days. So you saw one day. So if we're formulating opinions, of which, look, I love my message board and I love my Gopher Illustrated members, but it's even because of the lack of access. People are trying to decipher, like, the clips that they tweet out, or even like the long Coy Parrish one, of which we didn't even discuss here. Coy Parrish is also a part of this receiving core of some capacity, probably, even though I'm going to start punting. Before I start to play the Ryan Burns drinking game on this podcast, should my 2025 saying still be punt to the moon, or do we want to fire people into the sun? I feel like that sounds too aggressive, that last one, because there is no malice type of intent with something like that. Whereas punt to the moon is a lot more tame to me, but you be the call.
Yeah, I think you could nudge him off a cliff even if you want.
Jeepers creepers. No, that sounds... It sounds like something I'm watching on Netflix at that stage. But we got, like, Dave Revson out here talking about the next Travis Hunter potentially. Look, I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off now with Coy Parrish, as someone who talked to him at Big Ten Media Days. I've spent a lot of time asking about Coy's role, and I will continue to maintain, I will be surprised if Coy Parrish plays more than, say, 100 snaps on offense. Some of that is not because of Coy. Some of that is because of the guys we already mentioned, the Javon Tracy's, Logan Loya's, the Jalen Smith's, Kendrick Lanier's. Like, they have guys that have worked hard, and that is their main position to get the reps. But also, as you saw from the 70-yard, 7-on-7 touchdown last night, of which I don't know that I've seen a Gopher throw dissected as much as that one, where people are complaining that Drake underthrew him. Other people are complaining Coy slowed down, then he sped up. Folks, like, that would have been the longest pass play of the entire year last year, and we're out here disseminating. Like, I still believe Floyd is an outstanding athlete. He's one of the best athletes that I've seen don a Gopher uniform. I want to make that clear. But he's also, in my mind, he's a safety, somewhat playing receiver. And guess what? That's okay because he's a damn good safety.
Yeah.
Like, he's just an incredibly explosive athlete, of which they're going to try to find a way to get the ball in his hands as much as they can on offense. And then also on the return game, of which I wouldn't read into too much last night about Coy's role on offense or on special teams, is even Coy Parrish was upset about that. Flex said he came up to him after practice and was like, "What was that?" And Flex like, "Do you know who's here? Like, I'm not going to show BTN and the public what we actually plan to do with you."
Yeah.
So you just always have to remember, you have to take open practices with a giant grain of salt. But the receiver position specifically is one that I am fascinated to see. Like, if you ask me right now who's starting against Buffalo receiver wise, I'd tell you it's Javon Tracy, who's the transfer from Miami of Ohio. I'd tell you in the slot, it's going to be Logan Loya. And if they do go to a three wide receiver set, probably Lamecki Brockington, because they love to, as any college coach does. Seniority is king, but I will tell you,
dude, look, he's still probably the best blocker of that entire group too.
He could be.
Yeah. So like there's the seniority piece. Yes. But also there are things functionally he does well too. So
I would just tell you, there is as much competition behind them. Like we said, Kenrick Lanier, Malachi Coleman, Jalen Smith, Christian Driver, like those four specifically come to the top of my mind that are competing. And then you also throw Coy Parrish in there. That's eight names. So on the flip side of the coin, I've also heard some Gopher fans consternate that, well, they're rotating so much because they don't have an alpha. Well, no kidding. I mean, they're not going to replace Daniel Jackson in one offseason, but they need to give guys opportunities to replace Daniel Jackson. Like, Logan Loya is going to be a third down, a green zone, red zone type of slot receiver. Like, that's fine. That has a useful role within any offense, but then you also have higher upside guys like Javon Tracy, Jalen Smith, Malachi Coleman, Christian Driver, among others. So I am going to be very curious, because I started to talk about it and then I get sidetracked. You know how these podcasts go, but Fleck was talking about how week one, it's just installing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, week two, we find out who starts to hit the wall, what can certain guys handle, who really can put it together consistently. And then in week three, they parse it down even more, and then they break camp at that point, and then they have an idea of who's going to play against Buffalo, and then you take it to Northwestern State and then to Cal Berkeley. But it's just still the first week of camp. So there's a lot of things that Matt Simon and Greg Harbaugh and this offensive staff are working through at receiver. But you are correct in saying this is among the deepest ones I've seen in some time.
All right. I also want to say I think this is one of the deepest running back rooms I've seen in some time. I was just really impressed in a practice. You didn't see Darius Taylor get a lot of run. And if we're going to talk about an alpha as a receiver, I still think he's probably the alpha. I don't know, man. I was impressed at running back as well. I just thought they have a good variety of guys. Good to see some familiar faces as well. But all in all, I think they're in a good place at running back. Much better than they have been in sometimes.
Yeah, this is, at least on paper, and I would agree with you with my own two eyes, it feels like they have as much depth at the skill positions as they've had in at least a few years, I'll say, because I look at that running back room and it had a ton of transition from last year. I mean, a significant amount. We talk about you lost your RB2, Marcus Major, to graduation. You lost Jordan Newbin to transfer, your third down back. He's at Kent State now. Jared Mangum, the bowl game hero, he graduated. C.A. Bengura, he's now at Ohio. You lost a couple of freshmen to Louisiana Monroe, NDSU, and Iowa Western. And it's essentially the only two guys coming back were Darius Taylor and Femi Ijeboy. Now, you got to see A.J. Turner for the first time last night, and you can see why A.J. Turner at Marshall was one of the most explosive running backs in the country, especially at the group of five level, because I think he is going to be an infuriating type of back for PJ. I say that because he is someone that, now this is also a Minnesota Twins podcast, It where, is. Well, unfortunately for me, it's the only team I can have a fandom of, and quite the week.
I got nothing to give.
Yeah, that's okay. But the way I like to, I guess, talk about AJ Turner is he's a guy like Matt Wallner, where he's up there swinging for the home run. And it gets infuriating at times because in the football instance, I'll say there will be runs where AJ Turner could have put his head down and gotten 4 yards, but instead he's going to bounce it east-west to try and hit the big play, hit the home run, and he might lose a yard. And I think PJ, knowing some other backs of yesteryear under him who have tried that, he's going to have to relinquish some control in that aspect to his running back coach and his offensive coordinator, because you were able to see it in a couple of runs on Saturday night. When he breaks it and he swings for the fence and he hits the home run, he can get east-west like few Gopher running backs have been able to do. Because so much of the Fleck tenure has just been north-south guys. And there's nothing wrong with guys like that. Again, Mo Ibrahim, Darius Taylor. I mean, Rodney Smith was more of an east-west guy, but Shannon Brooks always put his head down. A Kobe McCrary even. Like, east-west guys haven't always been the focal point. Now, I still think Darius Taylor is going to get his. But in A.J. Turner, you can see why getting him 7 to 10 touches a game in some capacity is going to be an important thing for Minnesota to try and figure out. Plus, even your boy from Washington last night, Cam Davis. Looked like more like the player he was a few years ago.
Coming off the injuries that he had, I definitely think he can play a role. I frankly like him better than Newbin as like a third down back.
Which people need to remember too. Like if Cam Davis is in the game, I think still he's going to be more goal line and third down. Like even if that's say the Marcus Major type of role from last year. Now it's a little bit different, but Marcus Major caught 20 passes last year.
Yeah.
And I know Max Brosimer liked to check it down, and maybe Drake Lindsey, which we'll get to, was going to want to air it out a little bit more. But still within the constructs of a Greg Harbaugh offense, the check down is going to be a vital part of it. So I think Cam Davis has got some pretty soft hands. And then maybe the guy who, again, RB4, and we talk about it, and I know people are tired of me talking about this, Luke, is it's an odd year. Which means the angry running back god in 2021 struck this room, in 2023 struck this room, to where by mid-October both seasons, the Gophers were on RB4 and RB5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not wishing that upon this room because I want Darius Taylor to go rush for 1,300 yards and then go to the NFL. But if you get to RB4, Femi Ejiboy looks like a guy who knows that Darius Taylor's going to get his, AJ Turner's going to get his, Cam Davis has a role, but Femi is trying to make a point, I think, that he's through his redshirt year and he's ready. So I think those four specifically, and I think then it's a drop off to the next guys on the list, but it is going to be kind of fascinating for me to see how much do they want to load Darius Taylor up, because you still got AJ Turner and Cam Davis waiting in the wings, and then a guy like Femi Ejiboy is also waiting for a shot.
Yeah, I definitely can see the vision that they have. They have depth, they have variety, versatility, and you hope everyone can stay healthy, but I think they could endure some injuries. I really hope they don't have to, like you're saying. I just think the running game is going to be better than it was last year. People may forget it was not a very good running game.
It was an incredibly inconsistent running
game. That's better. That's more fair.
Maddening, because they would run it well against USC and then they couldn't run the ball against UCLA. They ran the ball all well in Champaign against a really good Illinois team.
Yeah.
And then the next week against Rutgers couldn't run the football. It was like you didn't know what you were getting from week to week, from quarter to quarter, from series to series, even sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's where I talked with Darius Taylor about that at Big Ten Media Days. And they've been working through some schematic things with him throughout the offseason of some things they've tweaked. I would also tell you, I think Darius Taylor is in as good of shape as I've seen him. I think he has really taken his body seriously. Now, he did prior to last season, which is why he was able to play in 12 consecutive games to end the year. But he knows what's on the line now, which if he can be an all Big Ten running back and rush for, again, last season he ran for 986 yards and 10 touchdowns. You're thinking to yourself, boy, it felt like more. Well, yeah, it's because he also caught 54 passes, which was the most of all Big Ten running backs. Plus, he even threw one against Virginia Tech in the bowl game, if you remember. So he was Mr. All-Purpose, but I think the focal for him is if he can stay healthy and they can get this offensive line, which we'll get to the offensive line. I've still got a little bit of question marks there. I mean, if he can rush for 1,200-something yards, I mean, there is a lot of you look at NFL draft Twitter and you talk to different guys, and there were a couple – I think there were three, four scouts there last night. I mean, Darius Taylor is one of the guys that is among the underclassmen running backs in college football that is getting a lot of hype.
Mm-hmm. And I think rightfully so. And I agree with you. You know, you like to see him have a very strong year and then, you know, potentially move on to the NFL. He's going to need that, right, to be able to have that option. And it will need to stay healthy as well. Okay. I've given kind of two hot takes, broad brush stroke hot takes. What about for you?
You want to go quarterback or you want to go offensive line? I also don't want to forget about my favorite collegiate position in terms of the one I played as well.
Yes. Let's go quarterback. We'll go quarterback and then we'll catch a break.
All right.
I will say this. It's very clear Drake Lindsey is number one. I don't think there's any question. I don't think there's any question about that. He looks the part in terms of the size, etc. He's probably the most effortless thrower I've seen in recent memory. It just flings out of his hand. Even the bomb he threw looked effortless. But a lot of these, you know, across the to the other hash, going across the other hash to the other sideline, throws, like, he just, man, it's incredible how effortless that looks.
Yeah, it's been an interesting offseason, I'll say that, because we went into after spring ball, Fleck wouldn't name a starter, and he hits us with the thing that I guess is true. Like, jobs are not won in the spring. You just put yourself in position going into the summer, and then you win them in fall camp. Well, I mean, he clearly won the quarterback competition versus Zach Pyron to the point where Zach Pyron transferred to South Alabama.
Yeah.
And then they brought him to Big Ten Media Days as, like, a fourth guy. So you don't bring a quarterback to Big Ten Media Days if he's not going to be the guy. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say this. I know some of you have already read these statistics, but I know Luke Buehr has not because he refuses to read me. So I went through, because I think context with Drake Lindsey this season is going to be incredibly important. So I went through and looked through the stat lines of other first-time starting quarterbacks here at Minnesota. So I picked four guys, and you can tell me if you think that's a representative sample or not of these four. I picked Ethan Kaliak-Manis' first year as a starter, Tanner Morgan's, Mitch Leidner's, and the pride of Moundsview, Minnesota, or at least Moundsview High School, excuse me, Shoreview stand up, Adam Weber. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through their first years as a starter. Now, Tanner technically split with Zach Anix did that year. So What do you think of the four of those guys, the highest completion percentage season was between the four of them? Like, what specific number?
58%.
You're right. It was Tanner Morgan's 2018 season where he completed 58.6% of his passes. Now, Ethan's first year as the starter, 53. Mitch Leidner's was 51, which I remember Leidner Island very differently. But I guess he wasn't the greatest of passers. But now, if you put him in a goal line situation, boy, oh boy, could that man find the end zone. And then Adam Weber completed 57% of his passes. Now, he also threw, I think, 3.5 times more than Tanner Morgan did. And with that came 24 passing touchdowns. Also with that came 19 interceptions, which if a Minnesota quarterback under PJ Fleck threw 19 interceptions, I can only imagine the amount of Xanax that man would have to take to get through the season. So this is me putting an over-under. of what I think expectations should be for Drake. And I went back and I looked through last year's Big Ten starting quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So here's the number I will put of what I think is realistic for Drake Lindsey. Now, knowing the context of, like I said, Tanner Morgan is the highest completion percentage of those four that I picked. Again, you can be arbitrary in your sample size. Luke Buehler is the first one to always tell me that. And you'll tell me right now that's not a big enough sample size, of which, Luke, I cannot please
it's
you
not,
all.
It's not that bad, actually, but keep going.
See, this is what I mean, people. You can't. It's not that bad. I'm trying my best out here, Luke. I'm going to put the Drake Lindsey over-under completion percentage for 2025 as a redshirt freshman starting for the first time in the Big Ten at, I think I wrote, 62%. Would you take the over or the under?
In this system, I would probably take the over.
See, smart money, I think, would be, I think a lot of listeners, knowing the context, would say, well, under. And I think maybe I'm a little too high on that completion percentage. Maybe if I set it at 60, 60 and a half, I'd feel a little bit better. But I also know that a part of a Greg Harbaugh system is the check down, of mm-hmm. which theory is a much higher percentage throw than something 10 plus yards down the field. So it's very fascinating, I will say, to try and parse through. Now, I'll also say, so Ethan's first year, which was Greg Harbaugh's first year, Minnesota threw the ball with Ethan 294 times, okay? Max Brosmer last year, Minnesota's starting quarterback, threw it, I think, 406 times, if I have that correct. So I'm setting, now I'll give you again the option of the over or the under, at Drake Lindsey passing attempts at 345. Would you take the over or the under?
I'd probably take the under.
Barely. See, the case for the under, I would imagine in your mind, is the running game is better.
Yes.
So they're just going to run the ball more. They have more success running the ball, so they don't, in theory, have to lean on the short passing game as much in second and third down scenarios. Their schedule, I think, is pretty similar to last year in terms of, you look at it on paper, they're probably going to be favored in seven of the games, six, seven of the games. I think that number is pretty good. I don't think he ends up throwing it 400 plus times because I think the running game is going to be better. And it's a young quarterback. And just like JJ McCarthy with the Vikings, like, they want to be able to ease him in. Now, what they want and what is actually going to be reality is going to be fascinating to kind of watch. Now, in theory, September is not murderer's row.
No.
I was having a conversation with someone about this last night. I think Buffalo might be the toughest team on the schedule. That might be now I'm going to recant to give more context on that Buffalo game specifically in the month of September, before people lose their minds and whatnot, might be the most difficult September game, because it's game one. You don't know what you're going to get. It's Drake Lindsey's first start. Now, on the road at Cal Berkeley is its own entity. It's the first road game. And then a bye week to prepare for Rutgers, of which, you know how much I love a good stroll down Narrative Street, especially after Minnesota's staff, I will die on the hill of, spun their tires too much all week, not talking about it. And then they all got worked up about it. And then they didn't coach as well as they should have. But that Buffalo game is going to be fascinating for me to watch. But that's kind of the point here too, Luke, is it's not a murderer's row of September here. Like, you don't have like a Wisconsin type of schedule where the third game of the season, Drake Lindsey's got to go to Tuscaloosa and take on Bama at Bama.
Yeah. Just to be really clear, that first game is in August, but, you know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's August 28th.
I want you to change your best, you know.
All right, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Now, the other thing I would say is passing touchdowns to interceptions. So, Ethan was 14-9. Tanner was 9-6. Again, he split with Zach Anixted, so the numbers are a little skewed. Mitch Leidner was 11-8. And then Adam Weber, as I said, was 24-19. What do you think I'm at for where I kind of roughly have Drake Lindsey's numbers in that instance?
I would go something like 15 and 7.
I'm at 17 and 9.
Okay.
So that'd be, I think if you look compared to where all Big Ten quarterbacks were last year, that's like, I think 10th or 11th that would be in passing touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be about average in the Big Ten. I think when you look at Max Brosmer's last season, I think he was at 18 and 6. So a 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, only 6 picks, 18 passing touchdowns. But that was a 6-year guy. And mm-hmm. that's a guy who played a lot of football. He knew how to take care of the football, made some really key throws to get those passing touchdowns. I just think Drake has to learn. And that's where I also think as they get into the green and red zone, they're going to be able to run the ball better than they were last year, hopefully. But I also think Drake is going to be someone who has to learn yet what throws he can make and what throws he can't, of which I know he's learned that over the past 18 months here at the University of Minnesota. But there's no better time to learn that than Thursday nights, and then Friday nights, and then guess what? Saturdays. So as he continues to go through it, I will be the first one to tell you, especially at the quarterback position, and I know this is not new for many of you, the development is not linear. I wish it was. Trust me, I wish it could be just like a straight line on a graph where at the end you know it's going to be slightly up. But you got to almost view it, if we're going to continue with Ryan's horrible analogies on this podcast, like the stock market, where it's up and down and up and down and up and down. At the end of the year, you look, oh, looks like you're up 10%. Now, there were a lot of highs and a lot of lows in between that, but you kind of just have to put your head down and look at where you are at the end of the year. And that's where the hope would be from game 1 to game 13. When you get to game 13, you hopefully then look back at the season and think, yes, I mean, that Drake Lindsey is going to be someone of a cornerstone that they can continue to build this team around for 2026. Now, I happen to be higher on Drake than I think a lot of the national folks. But you now know what my expectations are, which are, say, 61-62%, a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio of some kind, and he's thrown it about 350 times. I don't know where that puts you in relative relation to other things in the Big Ten this year. I just know for a redshirt freshman, Drake can do a lot of different things that other guys haven't been able to do. Now, I'll be the first one to tell you that a Greg Harbaugh offense for the quarterback, and I talked about it with Drake out in Las Vegas, is there's a lot on his plate, and he has spent most of the offseason either on the board, does it hours a day, or drawing up the plays, trying to make sure that he understands all the different checks. Because do you remember the early part of the PJ Fleck tenure where many people were not too, I'll say, keen on the check to the sidelines offense that was Kurt Straka?
Well, and justifiably so, because at times, because it always felt like they were looking over with like the clock elapsing.
With like
right?
4 seconds on the play clock, and then there's all the consternation in the stands. Yeah. Well, Greg Harbaugh learned from his predecessor that he wants to be his own man. And what he wants to do is be more of an NFL type of offense, of which he talked about over the offseason how his two favorite coordinators to study are Ben Johnson, who is the former Lions offensive coordinator, now the Bears head coach, and then Liam Cohen, who used to be a Kentucky, who's now the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Or is he now – is Liam Cohen now with the New Orleans Saints?
I don't know.
Okay. But those two, where it's really like an NFL type of offense. So if you think about it, think about what Ben Johnson did at Detroit. Like, Jared Goff has a lot on his plate. They have to make the checks at the line of scrimmage. They're the ones making the checks at the offensive line, changing the play. And Drake's got to go through that in terms of in a high-pressure environment and how he responds, and we'll find out. But that's, to me, the biggest difference between him and the quarterback who started 2 years ago as a young kid, is the processing difference between Drake Lindsey and other quarterbacks at this stage, to me, is significant. And that has been passed on to me from a lot of different members of the organization over there. I think I agree with it with my own two eyes. And from asking Drake about it, not many 19-year-olds can kind of run through, at least in my opinion, the amount of things he can do. Now, whether that translates to on-the-field production, I hope it does, but nothing is guaranteed. But like I said, that is kind of where I fall expectation-wise for Drake. Now, as much as it is about Drake, I think, would you agree with me, it is a significant drop-off to whoever QB2 is.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, last night what we could see it was Shikin Jansky, who made some, like, seemed to make some good reads. But yeah, like, it feels like a drop-off.
Well, that's the thing about college football in this day and age is... The days of having a great quarterback two or even a quarterback two that you feel great about, it just doesn't exist for so many programs within college football these days. And that's where, if you ask me today, again, we're still over 3 weeks out from that Buffalo game, and those guys are still in the competition, and the guys competing are Dylan Wickey. Luke already mentioned the pride of Stillwater, Minnesota, Max Shikinjanski. And then you've also got former Boston College and Old Dominion quarterback Emmett Moorhead. To me, I think Emmett Moorhead's going to probably be the guy. Now, I think that's whatever your flavor of quarterback is, because they're all very different. But Emmett Moorhead has at least started games at the Power 5 level. And I think he'd probably be the one to get the nod, but we'll see how that battle continues to go. But to me, it is Drake Lindsey and then a significant drop-off.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You want to talk any more quarterback if you catch a break?
Let's take a break.
Ryan, I'm excited to announce that we have a new partnership with Blue Horizon Energy. And Ryan, do you have any idea how this came about?
I'd love to hear the backstory.
All right. So my dad forever has said to me, Luke, this combine, it only makes me money one part of the year. He has been fascinated with the idea of renewable energy for as long as I can imagine. So my dad got two big pivoting solar arrays that make money for him every single day.
Well, I'll be the first one to tell you, I know we have plenty of folks who do a lot of work out there in the farm fields, plenty of people that have commercial businesses. And I know that I've at least talked to a couple of them about solar energy before, but I know that there's a few that haven't quite got off the fence yet. If some of our listeners who fit right into that are thinking about it, where should they go?
Those who are interested in learning more should go to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. That is bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. They will get in touch with you right away. All right, let's talk a little bit of tight end, Ryan. This is a group that has a returner in Jameson Gears. Looks the part. Pierce Walsh looks the part. There are a number of guys that rotated in yesterday. You got some big bodies, and we know that Greg Harbaugh, that's terrible. We know that he has a variety of different formations that he'll run, and he'll often run out three and sometimes even four tight ends.
I mean, we saw that last night. There were four tight ends on the field in certain situations, but I think in an ideal world, this is still a 12 personnel team, which would be one running back, two tight ends. Now, it could be a fullback in terms of someone like Frank Bierman or Pierce Walsh, who are more of, I would say, your H type of tight ends, the guys that are either going to be lined up in the backfield, flexed off behind the Y tight end on the line of scrimmage, the guys that are moving in motion. Or you can have guys like Jameson Gears, who you think about as more of a traditional Y type of tight end, who's got his hand on the dirt next to the offensive tackle. He could be flexed out. You've also got the Purdue kid and Drew Bibber, who I know that this staff is excited about. I didn't see a ton from him on Saturday night, but I don't think the tight ends were a huge part of the focal point for Saturday's practice. So I think, to me, it's what kind of level does Jameson Gears have left, where he waited his turn for so many years behind St. Cloud Tech legend, the pitter-patter of my beating heart that was Brevin Spanford.
NFLer, by the way.
He's still in the NFL, by the way. Caught 10 passes in the NFL, by the way. But remember, I'm just a jamoke who doesn't know what he's talking about. Now, he goes from playing under 200 snaps prior to last fall, plays 500, and there were good moments and bad moments. The good moments being that 50-50 ball touchdown against Wisconsin, the game-winning touchdown catch against Illinois. You'll remember he was the one who caught the trick play touchdown against Penn State as well. But I also remember the UCLA game where first drive he has one, just like a Y seam, and if he catches it, it'd have been a 35-plus yard gain. Hits him right in the hands, drops. He has the late fumble against Rutgers, team leading five drops, inconsistencies in the run game. Now, a lot of that, even though he's an older guy, he was inexperienced. So the question is, does he clean up a lot of that inconsistency, and is there still something to lean on there? I think that there's a little bit left in the tank there for Gears. We're going to find out. But I also think they're going to lean a lot more on Drew Bibber too, because when you're replacing Nick Kallerup, and Nick Kallerup was more of the Co-Keefe kind of run-blocking tight end type. Now, Drew Bibber isn't that. Drew Bibber is kind of a do-it-all type of, he can play a lot of different positions. But you kind of lean on those type of guys where, like I said, I think it's going to be Jameson Gears and Drew Bibber. You'll still have Frank Bierman being the Kyle Hughescheck light for this Gopher offense. And then I think they're going to find a way to get Pierce Walsh onto the field. Now, yes. I talked him up quite a bit heading into 2024, and then he had a hamstring injury that went Cody Lindenberg on the bit, where he injured it in fall camp and then re-injured it. And then when you re-injure it, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, it's usually worse than the first time around. And then by that point, you're just going into a medical redshirt. So they're old there. I'll say that because Gears is in his final season. Drew Bibber's in his final season. Frank Bierman is in his final season. And then you've got Pierce Walsh in his third year in the program. You're old where it matters on the edges there. But the question is, how much upside did they have? I mean, I would tell you, history would tell you that young quarterbacks like to lean on tight ends, and we'll see how much that Drake Lindsey wants to lean on this group.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think that they have some flexibility there. To your point, is there another level for Jameson Gears? I think purely just with more consistency, there's another level, right? He was there, just couldn't make some of those plays. And some of that can come with experience and reps and just being another year older and another year familiar. So I definitely think there's an opportunity there. I too am very curious on Pierce Walsh and Bibber as well.
Well, that's where I think Pierce Walsh specifically, or if you want to get further down the depth chart to guys like Julian Johnson or Jacob Simpson, they're an injury away. They're not going to see the field significantly unless there's an injury ahead of them, which I'll be the first to tell you, tight end is a very physically demanding position. It's just like offensive line. It's a car crash on every play. And I know a lot of Gopher tight ends of yesteryear would be the first to tell you, including Matt Spaeth, who, if Mr. Matt Spaeth is listening to this podcast, hello, Mr. Matt Spaeth. Thank you for listening again. But I mean, they play through some of the craziest things. And it's, again, if a guy has to miss a game or two, that's where a Walsh type can step up. But I think it's going to be a lot of Gears, Bibber. And then if they do need a fullback, that's where Frank Wham-Block Bierman comes into play.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You like that nickname, don't you? I like that for me. I got a chuckle out of you. It's tough. Look, when you've been together as long as you and I have been, Luke.
Yeah.
Just to hear that, I know on the other end of this line there's a smile, makes my heart flutter. I want you to know.
That was pretty good. You could probably do a wham block joke with just about any tight end.
True story. That's how I tore one of my labrums. Me attempting to wham block, and then I just tore out the bat. That's a whole different podcast.
And that ended your football career, I imagine.
I refuse to do glory days. So let's get to the final one, which is, to me, I say that as I rub my temple. It's still the biggest question mark about probably this entire offense in terms of ceiling, floor. Does it allow the offense to do what they want to do? And that is Brian Callahan's offensive line. What were your initial impressions here?
I like where you went with that. And let's continue with it. Do you think this offensive line sets the ceiling or the floor?
Honestly, I think the answer is both. Where if they're good, if they're good and you can protect Drake Lindsey and allow him, because I think a lot of people are probably yelling into their vehicle or at the gym or on the walk or mowing the lawn, whatever they're doing, saying, Ryan, I was at the practice last night and Drake Lindsey was just throwing off his back foot too much for my liking. Yeah, because Drake Lindsey was once the both tackles left with minor injuries. I mean, I'm watching Peace and Love to Aluma Nakeely, but I'm watching Aluma Nakeely at left tackle in the Big Ten, which there's never a chance that that is ever going to happen. There would have to be so many injuries at other positions that that would be the case, because there's just no way he's a left tackle in the Big Ten at this stage of his career. So the answer is both, where if they can be more athletic in the run game, plus if they can keep Drake upright and allow him to be confident and sit there in the pocket, I feel good. But to your point about floor, if they're not good and Drake gets David Carr'd, which for those of you who are too young to remember who David Carr is.
I remember.
Former, I think he went to Fresno State, but I'm thinking of his time with the early, it was the Houston Texans, right?
Yes, it was with the Houston Texans.
First 2 years where they were an expansion. He was a highly thought of, high first round pick. And he just got his brains beat in, and he was never the same, and he was skittish all the time. Well, if Drake can't stay upright, and Darius, every time he gets the ball, has a guy in his face, like at times he did last season, the answer is both, Luke. I mean,
yeah.
I just don't know what to expect, because they're replacing, I think, over 100 Big Ten starts without Ariante Ursery, Quinn Carroll, and Tyler Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably agree. They will dictate how good this running game truly can be, right?
Right.
And you've got some built-in advantages with Drake in the size. There's a little bit he can get away with just that way. And you can get away with offensive line play if you're good pre-snap. But at the end of the day, it's the post-snap matters massively too, to have your success in throwing the ball. And I just think that they hold the key to the ability of the offense to get longer developing plays where you can take advantage of Lindsey's arm. And if you can't do that, I think that this offense's ceiling is just so hampered.
Yeah, it is fascinating to kind of think about, because not only do you lose Ursery and Cooper and Carroll, who left tackle, right tackle, left guard, Martez Lewis is now at Northwestern. Philip Daniels is now at Ohio State. Now, they brought in a bunch of transfers to try and mitigate it. But the thing, I would argue, the one position that is going to dictate the success of this group is going to be offensive tackle. And I don't know if they're any good there right now. I think Nathan Roy will be good. Will Nathan Roy be good as a redshirt freshman starting for the first time in the Big Ten, getting, if he is the left tackle starter, his first career start against Buffalo? I mean, I think that's a lofty ask for a redshirt freshman. But and then on the other side, is it going to be Dylan Ray, the Kentucky transfer? I would argue the guy that I think might be among the most talented, I know the least about still, and that's the Washington transfer, Khalid Tafai.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody knows that much about him, right?
Well,
he hardly played for Washington.
I was talking to some people from Washington out of Big Ten Media Days, and it kind of is in line with the story here so far, which Khalid Tafai, as a redshirt freshman, started at left tackle for Washington in November. He is essentially the Washington version of Philip Daniels.
Yeah.
And he's now at Minnesota, and I would say that he was recovering from, I believe it was off-season shoulder surgery. So he missed all of spring ball here at Minnesota, but he was here. And unfortunately, I would say his conditioning got away from him and he added some weight. Now, he has dropped, I've been told, 25-plus pounds since the end of spring ball to where he is here in fall camp. But even watching him yesterday, he's clearly still getting into game shape. But when he is out there, I think Khalid Tafai is among the best five linemen they have. The question is, where does Khalid Tafai play? Is it left tackle, right guard, left guard? Figure it out to me. Now, it's going to be on Khalid to get in shape to be able to do so. But if he's in shape, I think you figure it out. Because the way he's able to move people with his footwork, I thought was pretty good. But it's just, outside of, I know Ashton Beers is going to start at center, who he started games for Minnesota at right guard last year. Greg Johnson, who started every game at center, he's going to be starting at one of the guard spots, back at more of his natural position, where I've had multiple articles out with him here this offseason. I think he'd be the first to admit he was thinking too much as a first-time center, and it didn't allow him to play to his athletic abilities. But there's just so many things with this group where I could tell you seven names right now, and I will, where you think you have Nathan Roy, Khalid Tafai, Greg Johnson, Ashton Beers, Tony Nelson, Marcellus Marshall, who is a transfer from UCF, and then a right tackle by the name of Dylan Ray, who comes to Minnesota from Kentucky. I think those seven guys are the ones competing for five spots right now.
Okay.
If you wanted to include some other guys in there, I think I'd have a bigger issue with that at this stage. But I still have questions about where everybody's going to be 25 days out. And that's where I know that some people say that this statement is semantics, but I mean, you're going to have five new starters on the offensive line at new spots, at least. Yes, Greg Johnson and Ashton Beers return, but they're going to be playing at new spots. You're going to have brand new tackles. They just don't have any tackle depth. They have very little at all. Now, how did they get here? Don't go back and look at their 2021 and 2022 recruiting classes, of which those guys would be redshirt juniors, redshirt seniors, somewhere in there, because you're not going to find a lot of names that are still on the roster. And that has been a problem. And that's why they had to go so transfer heavy to help them at tackle, because you're going to be going from Ariante Ursary to a guy starting for the first time. For whatever you thought of Quinn Carroll, at right tackle, I think in September, or as Luke would also remind me, on August 28th at Huntington Bank Stadium, I think you're going to see a lot of tight ends and running backs chipping to help the offensive tackles slow down a pass rush. Now, if you're going to chip with a tight end or a running back to help your offensive line, that means your receivers better get open, because that's one less guy in the progression for Drake Lindsey. Now, we'll see as Brian Callahan continues to figure it out. And again, I think Cali is a good offensive line coach, but we saw how inconsistencies on the offensive line can just really take this team down. We saw that throughout last year in different moments, but then we would see when the offensive line wanted to bring it, they could change in the outcome of an entire game for Minnesota. So the question is, what are we going to see more of? Now, I don't know that yet. That's probably the number one thing about this offense I'm trying to figure out for these next two Gopher practices, is how does this run game continue to come together? Of which, I'll say this, we'll talk about it next week when we get to the defensive side. But last night, in terms of practice one of fall camp that I have seen now in 15 years, that was one of the better offensive line performances in the run game I've seen. Now, I think about is his friend of the podcast, Parker Fleming, was one of the smartest men in college football media. And it's where if your quarterback, he sent out a tweet where it's like, if your quarterback looks good at a practice, your defense is bad. If your quarterback looks bad, you know, your defense is good. Or it's like, he's trying to make fun of, you know, like everybody has to have a hot take.
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah.
But I tell you, the offensive line figured it out pretty good in the run game last night, which is good. That's what I wanted to see. But I also have questions about, can the defense stop the run, especially if Devin Eastern, Jalen Logan Redding, and Anthony Smith aren't on the field? Now, that's a separate podcast for a separate day.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll leave people with this. I mean, between Nathan Roy, who, again, prospect pedigree, former number one player in Wisconsin, he's just a redshirt freshman. And I think there's a lot of people within the program that'll tell you they have high hopes for him. But you'll remember year one of Ariante Ursary mm-hmm. was not great. He's going to have to take his lumps at right tackle. You know, if it's Dylan Ray or maybe Khalid Tafai challenges one of the two of them. Those are the three names. Now, you did see Marcellus Marshall play a little bit of left tackle last night in a pinch. Now, he has started a game at all five positions in his college football career along the offensive line, which not many people can say. But I would tell you that Minnesota wants to keep him on the interior. And so guard or at one of the guard spots if they can. I feel a lot better about the interior of the offensive line than I do the tackles, but you are correct in saying that no part of this offense outside of Greg Harbaugh, the offensive coordinator, holds the keys to the season more than what does this offensive line bring from mm-hmm. a game basis, month to month, even series to series. That is going to dictate if this team can have a 9-3 season or if they're going to be a 5-7 team.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different outcomes in between.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's part of what always makes college football a blast too. You can see a group mature and grow and get better as the season goes along. We saw that in 2019, right? And you saw the heights they were able to go to, but you can also see a team struggle to find cohesion and gel. And while frustrating, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. It'll be an interesting thing to monitor. It's something I'm going to be paying close attention to. I think many will be paying more close attention to Drake Lindsey. I frankly am probably going to pay more attention to the offensive line. I just think that has more weight. If you are trying to assign weight of success on this specific side of the ball for the Gophers.
Yeah, it is. There's so many new things with this offense that you want to watch. Like, to your point, I want to watch how Drake Lindsey looks. I want to watch how A.J. Turner and Cam Davis and Femi Ijeboy fit into the backfield. Wide receiver is completely different than a year ago, and so is the offensive line. So it's like, here, Greg Harbaugh, you have a brand new quarterback, 5 new starters on the offensive line. You're replacing Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer. Figure it out. All right. Well, again, this is why he is the highest paid coordinator in Gopher football history and also the lowest paid potentially in all of the Big Ten, because that's a different podcast for a different day. But it is the realities for Greg Harbaugh this year is there's a lot of change that he's got to figure out. How do I make our strengths even bigger strengths, and how do I hide all of our weaknesses? And I think it's not going to be – I think until they get to that first bye week, you're going to see some interesting things with this offense.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see them find their footing. You know, part of what makes college football so fun too is there is no preseason, right? Game one, we're playing, and it means something.
Right.
So it'll be fun. And as you mentioned, Buffalo's no slouch.
No, I think preseason polls got them fourth. And I will tell you, like, game ones are just always a mystery. And we've seen it the last 2 years where Nebraska and North Carolina, it's just, you mm-hmm. just never know what, what the heck you're going to see on a Thursday night in Minneapolis. And I think Buffalo is a pretty good team. I think they're a very solid team. I got a lot of respect for them. So it's not going to be like 2022 when New Mexico State comes into town. They do have a pulse. Now, it's also not North Carolina or Nebraska. So I'm just excited that we're 25 days away. Yeah. I got to spend an hour of my life actually talking about Gopher football, not in terms of a hypothetical sense in the months to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's 25 days away, baby. We're almost there.
Okay. Real quick. One player for you, that you are very intrigued with on offense. And if you've brought it up already, great, but who's just name one that you're very intrigued to follow this season.
I said his name in passing and I've wrote about him quite a bit and I still think I'm probably a year away. Cause I need Lamecki Rocket Chip to graduate and Logan Loya to graduate, but I want to be the captain of the Jalen Smith chip.
All right.
The redshirt freshman from Mankato West who got his feet wet in the bowl game for like 2 snaps. Anybody, how do I want to phrase it? The drumbeat for him over at 15th Street and Dinky Town over there has been very steady from January through August, that he has made significant strides. I asked PJ Fleck about him on the record at Big Ten Media Days, and he talked about how you just know how some guys have it, and he thinks that Jalen Smith has it. Now, Jalen Smith's got to beat out some guys in September if he wants to be able to play consistently throughout the fall. And like I said, I might be a year away, but with my own two eyes and from what my sources continue to tell me, I think the kid from Mankato West is going to be a pretty dang good college football receiver.
All right. The one I'm going to watch, you did talk about a fair amount. I was very intrigued by AJ Turner. Just something that I feel like the Gophers haven't had in a while. That kind of skill set, that east-west kind of back. I think a good complement to Taylor. Very interested to see how he can get involved, and especially if they can find a way to get him involved in the passing game, much like Taylor. So you always have to be concerned about the running back as a receiving threat. I'm very curious to see the role he will play, because it's just something the Gophers just haven't had in previous memory.
Well, I'll also say this, and we'll save it for the next podcast. A kick return duo of Coy Parrish and AJ Turner.
That'd be fun.
Boy, with that, I mean, that's like we're cooking with hot oil, baby. Like we've seen some Gopher kick return duos over the year where you're just sitting there like, are they hoping for the most plodding 15 yards that I've ever seen?
Yeah.
So Greg Harbaugh's offense can start with -8 yards of field position.
Yeah.
But every time there would be a kickoff and Coy Parrish or AJ Turner would be back there, I mean, the entire stadium would be with bated breath, of which I hope this is the year for them, but we'll get to that next week.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Again, thanks to Blue Horizon Energy for supporting the show. We appreciate them. Again, you can reach out at bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.